You know, there are any number of legal issues that can involve children, such as circumstances in which the child's health and safety may be at risk, kids going through the adoption process, children who are abuse victims. And then, of course, there's things like foster care situations and special education access, funding for medical, developmental, and mental health services as required by state law. And there's the laws that applies to immigrant children, the guardian ad litem program. The list just goes on and on and on. Now, the Florida Bar Foundation is one organization that's a primary source of help in so many of these cases. And this morning on Perspectives, we'll find out more about that and how it applies both here in the Capital Region and elsewhere, all over Florida, from four distinguished family law attorneys from the Tallahassee area. And we welcome to Perspectives, Shannon Novy. Good to have you on today.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Kristen Adamson, right next door. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Tom. It's nice to be here.
Mr. Thomas Duggar, a pleasure, sir.
Thank you for having me.
And Rob Boyd, thanks for coming on.
It's good to see you, Tom.
Let's talk a little bit about, first, the whole idea of the Florida Bar Foundation, what it is and how it kind of ties into this whole family law matter. Who wants to handle that one? Florida Bar Foundation. Who's a good source on that?
Well, we're here also on behalf of the Family Law Section and the Family Law Section's involvement with the Florida Bar Foundation. But the Florida Bar Foundation basically handles legal services across the state. There's 23 organizations that the Florida Bar Foundation is involved with. And the Family Law Section's donations have helped the Florida Bar Section with these 23 organizations. Some examples you've already touched on, and that is funding legal representation to foster care children, access to special education, funding for medical, developmental, and mental health services, immigrant children's issues, the guardian ad litem program, which is vastly underfunded and losing money as we speak, and is very tenuous. So hopefully the Florida Bar Foundation's will be able to keep that going as well. Children's education projects, independent living projects, and Florida Legal Services, which is in Tallahassee, and which is very important for representing children in legal custody, divorces, and abuse situations, and things of that matter. So the Florida Bar Foundation is significant in terms of serving children throughout Florida.
Now, the foundation just received, what, a $75,000 grant from the Family Law Division here. $75,000 for the entire state? How much is that going to help?
Well, hopefully it will help. I mean, it's a small pittance compared to what the need is out there. But the Family Law Section represents about 4,000 family law lawyers in Florida, and the section is made up of completely volunteer lawyers. It's a completely volunteer thing that they do, and the money that they bring in is on a completely volunteer basis. So hopefully the section's involvement in terms of that $75,000 will be a step in the right process anyway.
Oh, okay. Shannon, you were nodding your head there. What do we want to kick in?
Well, you know, the lawyers across the state, of course, have to be members of the Florida Bar. They do not have to be members of any particular section. So each section that specializes in a different area collects dues, and then the section itself has a structure that provides continuing legal education to promote excellence in the practice of family law across the state. And the section has been very successful in doing that. Of course, family law is something that touches the lives of so many people. You know, that I think that I don't know the statistic on it, but you know, I think that the average person who needs legal representation is likely to come into contact with a family law lawyer, and so there are a lot of lawyers doing it, and we're happy that that lawyers are interested in participating in that education and promoting excellence and promoting programs that are able to give back to the community and protect children in particular.
What kind of clients does the foundation look for as far as the whole family law situation? I presume someone who has a six-figure income would not fall under the bailiwick of this kind of program. Tom?
That's correct. The foundation, the programs that the foundations fund look for children and families that are in need, there's a means threshold. So you kind of have to have assets below a certain mean and incomes below a certain mean. But the $75,000 donation, getting back to that, from an attorney perspective, that should be about enough money to keep one attorney working full time for the next year, working in one of these programs in whatever the foundation's 23 programs are. We didn't earmark it for a specific program. The family law section didn't. But it should be enough to keep about one attorney moving forward. And the foundation has seen significant declines recently, especially in the downturn of the economy, with its funding because of the nature and the structure in which the foundation is funded. It's funded from attorneys' trust accounts, and the interest rates on those trust accounts has gone down as interest rates across America have gone down, and it's led to very, very vast shortages. And so this $75,000 donation will be used pretty much to keep one attorney for the next 12 months.
Yeah, so from the every little bit helps department. But Rob, your specialty seems to be here, the overall funding thing. We're not looking too good in Florida right now, are we?
Well, Tom, with the economy being down and interest rates being incredibly low, like Thomas just pointed out, the returns aren't there. And everybody worries about the economy. And the one thing you see whenever the economy goes tight, so do charitable donations. Any organization that lives on charitable donations right now, when families are making decisions of what they can do with their public's dollars, it's not always going to be that they're donating to whatever particular cause that they would support if they were more secure in their economy. So everything's all tied together. One point I would like to make, just to make kind of clarify this legal services issue, Thomas talks about keeping one full-time lawyer on. Most people do not have interaction with legal services. They may have interaction with a particular attorney, and there's plenty of jokes out there about the statistics on family law marriages, 50% of which I believe don't fail. But when we get into what their interaction is going to be, we're talking about the people that are protected by legal services are those who are truly indigent and unable to get legal help. And for every one attorney that's being funded, those are usually managing attorneys. That's something else I want everybody to understand. Not only are the family law attorneys donating funds to support it, but most of the counties and local bar associations have where attorneys do pro bono work. So like legal services will have a managing attorney on staff, but they may have 30 to 150 different attorneys that donate their time as well to the representation of children and legal services in their local areas. So it's the idea of having a managing attorney is more so that somebody's up there keeping an eye on all the cases and able to organize the efforts, the pro bono efforts of all these local attorneys as well.
Yes, essentially the traffic cop function on this entire thing. But back to the money again, here we are with an economy that, while somewhat recovering, continues to sputter in so many instances. We have a state budget that, again, has undergone a lot of cuts for human services, yet to be signed or vetoed or whatever by Governor Scott. And all indications are that there is a greater need for family law type services because you have more families under stress and strain, and that causes disruptions and the kinds of problems we talked about at the get-go. So, Shannon, where does that leave us? Where does that leave you guys in trying to meet this need?
Well, Tom, there are approximately 25 children's advocates currently working in legal aid organizations around the state right now. And they've been supported by grants from the Florida Bar. And last year, $2.8 million was distributed by the Florida Bar for those children's legal services. And it was and that had to be cut. And the Bar is anticipating that there are going to be further cuts, as much as $1.25 million by 2013. And so, every time that an organization like ours, like the Family Law Section, steps up to the plate to do what we can to help fill that gap, it keeps people from falling through the cracks by not having access to those lawyers who are there to help them.
Yeah, but at some point you hit the threshold where you can no longer do anything, and you can't expect attorneys to turn over 50% of their billable hours to pro bono. You just can't. So what do we do?
Well, there is a requirement by the Florida Bar that – and it's a voluntary requirement. I mean, you don't become disbarred because of not doing it. But the Florida Bar has an expectation and the Supreme – through the Supreme Court that all lawyers throughout the state donate at least 30 hours, which is, you know, maybe a week's worth of free work, but that they donate at least 30 hours towards pro bono work. And by and large, most of that pro bono work is in the family law area because that is the area with the greatest need. And that is the area that, as we've stated before, most people are touched by if they have a need for lawyers. And so lawyers are trying to step up, but as Shannon pointed out, these cuts have been tremendous. If the cuts go on, it will be 55% cuts over 3 years for those services for legal services for children, and that's huge. The only thing that we've been able to do is step up in the private sector and try to help solve some of those problems, but they're very large. And kind of under siege at the moment is what it feels like.
Yeah, I can see why. Thomas, what happens to those folks then who can't get that access?
Well, the access would still be there. It's just a matter of the time that it takes to utilize the sources that are there. The 55% cut that Kristen was talking about would actually result in about a 54% drop in the number of cases that could be handled by any attorney at any given time. And that's kind of part of the problem. It just would continue to put more strain on our court system that's already under a lot of strain. And as the family law section, you know, kind of our motto is to try to help. You know, we feel that it's very important to do what we can. And we had a surplus this year, and we felt that it was important to take that surplus and utilize our private sector dollars to help the public good. And it's just an unfortunate situation, and without proper funding, it will continue to go that way.
414-1234, the number to call for perspectives. We're talking about family law with four distinguished Tallahassee area family law attorneys. We won't get into the specifics of any single case, but we will talk in general terms about what they and the Florida Bar Foundation are doing to help fill this gap when it comes to providing legal services for low-income families and particularly the kids. Want to hear from you. 800-926-8809, the long distance number to Tallahassee. We also have an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. Legal services and family law. That's what we're talking about on Perspectives this morning. Again, the local number in Tallahassee, 414-1234. Long distance is 800-926-8809. We pick up the tab for that. Perspectives@wfsu.org is the email address. Rob Boyd, back to the money thing here with the Florida Bar kind of kicking in to pick up on the private sector support for these kinds of services, which are kind of iffy when it comes to the public sector right now.
Well, one of the issues, Tom, is that to the extent that donations come from the private sector, they obviously remove from what's going to be required in a budget coming from taxpayers. Budgetary issues, obviously, seeing that we still don't have a budget signed, are very tense. And any time that something can be cut, you always have to worry about what it is that you're cutting. If the budget cuts legal services for children out, then we have serious problems with what we're looking at as the value of our future in Florida. So to the extent that private funds can come in and help, that's great. What will happen if it gets taxed is you're going to end up with a situation where it's primarily supported by taxpayer dollars. Then these services will also decrease. And some of those services are just they can't go away. So the public sector, the taxation base, will have to pick it up. Things like the guardian ad litem program, protection for children in violence. Those are issues that you can't turn a blind eye to. So somewhere along the line, somebody's got to pick up the bill. And to the extent that the private sector steps up, it takes the weight off the taxpayer and is a very good thing.
Is it kind of analogous to the whole situation with health care in that if you have folks without the means to obtain it through normal means and they got to go to something like the emergency room, still someone is going to pick up the tab, and that tab's going to be picked up by, you know, folks who have the means to pick it up, or what?
I don't really know if I could make that analogy, because I think it's far worse than that. Mm-hmm. I actually think what happens is no one picks up the tab, and these people fall completely through the cracks and are not represented in any way through the system, so that it's worse even than that, because there is no real emergency room available to these people, whether it's abusive children or whether it's a foster care issue or something like that. I mean, the only in terms of your analogy, I guess the issue we have is some of these children may end up in places where we wouldn't want them to be, like prison. So if your analogy is prison will take care of them if they fall through the cracks, that might be it. But otherwise, what happens is there's just no fallback system for all of these children if this doesn't occur, if they aren't represented. I mean, the Guardian Ad Litem program, so that people understand what Guardians do. The Guardian Ad Litem program is made up in large part by volunteer individuals who go through a training, some of which are lawyers and some of which are not. And their sole purpose is to represent the child either in an abuse situation in dependency court or in a legal custody battle, in a nasty legal custody battle, where we have indigent people who cannot afford any other type of representation. And the Guardian Ad Litem program is someone, an individual who is specifically assigned to that child and represents their interests. And if we don't have funding for that program, there's no one really representing the interest of those children going through these really sometimes drastic and horrible situations.
I mean, does Florida even permit a minor child to go through these proceedings unrepresented?
Yes, and that would happen if not for the Guardian Ad Litem program, because, for example, if an attorney represents either a party in a divorce or a parent in a dependency action, they're not representing the child. They're representing that parent. And the court is not actually able to, for the most part, bring in the child to testify or because of their age or something like that. So there is no representation for that child but for the guardian.
Otherwise, it's not like a criminal proceeding where if you cannot afford an attorney, one will be appointed for you, and the
exactly.
child is just there.
Correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct, Tom. And kind of getting back to your emergency room analogy, Florida courts are open for anyone to utilize them. What the family law section did through their donation and to the foundation was try to provide people the ability to have someone with them to navigate that process. So you can always go to the court system and file a pro se form and represent yourself, but it's a very daunting procedure. You know, there's lots of different laws and procedures, and it can just be an overwhelming, you know, process. And plus, that also taxes our judiciary at the same time. The more pro se filings you have without an attorney there that can say, you know, maybe this isn't exactly what you need to be, you know, asking for in court, this isn't the exact way that you need to be going about it, it ties up the judiciary. And right now, at least in Leon County, the judiciary is very taxed with family law cases. The vast majority of them, you know, are pro se litigants. So the gift, the donation will help, you know, ease up some of that strain that's already on the court system by providing, you know, representation for people that might not otherwise be able to afford it.
Bob Enzer, who's the clerk of court for our circuit here, had been talking recently about just how bad it is getting, not only from the clerk's viewpoint, but staffing for judges. The entire judiciary seems to be, I don't want to say under attack, but in a way it sort of kind of is.
I think that's right, and I kind of smiled when you made the emergency room analogy, because I tell clients all the time that the court system is ill-equipped to deal with emergency situations. You know, that even people who have access to lawyers and are paying them have difficulty getting in front of a judge because of the amount of the caseload that all of these individuals have down at the Leon County Courthouse. And I know none of the lawyers around this table practice in the southern part of the state, but talking to our colleagues in the, you know, in Broward County and in Dade County, it's really something of a zoo. And so, you know, that I don't know what the answer is, but I do think that the judiciary is severely underfunded, and you know, all of us as members of the bar do what we can. I think that everybody sitting at this table takes on that responsibility that Kristen was referencing earlier to provide pro bono representation, but that doesn't help stem the flow of cases that are going through the courthouse.
Yeah, and how long does it take to get a case? I mean, just a child custody matter. How long does it take to get that before a judge today?
Well, Tom, that's an interesting question. Statistically, at one point, the Supreme Court put out a statistic that said a divorce should take 6 months. Now, the statistic is going to be drastically hedged because there are a lot of people who file pro se who have a complete agreement filed, go down there and file it all at once. And here it is, wham, bam, we're done in a week. There are other cases that have been protracted due to the either vexatious litigation or for whatever purpose for years. The Rosen case went in front of the Supreme Court, what, seven times? There are some cases that will hedge that statistic. I usually tell people that you try to be done within the year. It all depends on whether there's children. It depends on what kind of assets you're dealing with, what the financial situation is. So that's kind of getting to what Thomas was saying, that you don't always know what you're filing for as a pro se. They get into these arguments, and then they do end up coming and seeing us after their divorce and realize they haven't addressed all their issues.
But as far as the judicial resources in terms of being able to become in front of the judge, I know that every circuit in Florida certified a need for more judges, and only a couple of them were able to actually get more judges because of the lack of funding. So in order to certify the need for more judges, you have to show how many cases there are and the lack of ability to service these cases, which was what Thomas was talking about. I can tell you as a lawyer, if I file for a hearing regarding a child, and we always tell everyone there's no such thing as emergency hearing in family law that involves a lawyer, involves police. But sometimes they feel like emergencies, and they are kind of emergencies, and I think most people, lay people, would talk about them in terms of emergencies regarding children. You're not going to get in front of a judge for at least a month to 6 weeks. At least. That's the bare minimum time. The only thing that might get you in front of a judge is a kidnapping of a child by a parent out of the country or something like that. That might get you in a week. Anything else short of that is going to be a month to 6 weeks. And so that's what we're talking about, the judicial resources. And I think that what needs to happen is what we're doing today in terms of a general education about how important the judiciary is to people's everyday lives, because I think there's a lack of understanding about that in terms of what the legislature is doing in the budget. There needs to be a better understanding of how important the funding for the judiciary is and how integral a part of people's everyday lives this really is.
And many people may think that this is local funding or whatever, but this right. comes from the Florida legislature, correct?
Yes.
And when we're talking about the funding of the judiciary, it's actually two different aspects. There's the funding of the clerks and the funding of the judiciary. There's
right.
two competing interests. They're not really competing, but you have the judges that are funded, and then you have the actual court system that's funded. And my understanding is judiciary and the budget did not take too bad a hit. It's underfunded, so that's bad to start with. But they've even reduced funds on clerks, which is the administrative support for the judges. And what happens is when the onslaught on the judiciary is you have an access to courts issue, which becomes a constitutional issue.
Are we talking litigation here?
Well, there's, and unfortunately, because there's such a limited amount of dollars, what has happened is they have actually put the court system in conflict with itself in terms of the clerks and the judiciary. There's a lot of conflict for dollars in that, which absolutely should not be. They're both constitutional offices, and it should not be that way. But that's also what's happened. And all of the lack of dollars, whether it's the clerks or the courts, is important to people's access to justice.
We're joined on the phone by Jack here in Tallahassee. Hi, Jack. Welcome to Perspectives.
Well, thank you. This is an enlightening discussion. I would like to add to it by emphasizing a preventative approach to family court problems. And what I mean by that is, as much as we know the courts and the family protection system needs funding, we do have a kind of an antidote or even an immunization, which is prevention services like Healthy Families and opportunities for young parents to know the skills of parenting, because it's not an acquired skill. And there seems to me that when we look at where we need to put our dollars, we need a balanced approach. And if a program, for example, like Healthy Families, that keeps 98 or 99% of those families from going into the court system and the child protection system, you know, we can't ignore that reality or ignore the fact that we have to reduce caseloads. So let's support a balanced approach, and I think that's a way to relieve some of the stress on our court system.
Jack, really, really great points. Any reaction to that around the table, folks?
No, I completely agree, and I think that that's one of the things that the Florida Bar Foundation has also looked at, and that is why a lot of the money that is donated from the Family Law Section and the Florida Bar Foundation funds is not just for legal services. It's also for special education. It's for independent living projects. It's for services for teens and school support systems. So I agree that it's always best if we can keep people out of the judicial system. However, it's not always possible.
Mm-hmm. That gets us back to, again, that analogy with emergency rooms and such, but preventive medicine of any stripe is generally less expensive than letting it go all the way through to major surgery, which legal procedures sometimes can be on that. Shannon, you have any success stories, though? Let's talk about something a little bit happier and more cheerful in regards to what family law attorneys just in general can provide, that sort of services for families and kids.
Well, you know, people ask me and friends, you know, how do you do that? How do you deal with divorces and people that are so mad at each other all of the time? And you know, doesn't it make you into a bitter person? and I tell them, no, it doesn't. It just makes me, you know, feel grateful about all the things that I have in my life. But they also don't realize that we do have the opportunity to really help people, and sometimes to really help people without access to the court by, you know, helping to make a phone call to navigate through something that, like Thomas and Rob both talked about, that, you know, is complex and statutory and doesn't make sense at all to someone that doesn't have legal training. And you know, I'm thinking of one guy in particular that really had a problem, and it had to do with different states collecting some money from him that he didn't know them, and related to his kids, and I was able to help him get through that process. And it really feels good when you're able to help someone navigate the system and to get to a place where they're better off and their kids are better off.
Gosh, yeah, Florida law is complex and convoluted enough. When you start to get other jurisdictions in on that whole thing, I imagine that can be a total nightmare.
Right. Well, you know, when people – this is a mobile society, and when people move from one state to another and kids are in one place and parents are in another, that and state agencies are involved in the protection net that we're talking about, it definitely turns into a complex situation for everybody real fast.
Yeah, well, what story do you have, Kristen?
Well, one of the pro bono cases that I handled most recently that I felt really good about was basically helping somebody fight the system, which is always kind of fun.
Right.
And that was I handled a young man. He was 18, so he was no longer a minor. His father had not paid child support for a very long time, but then had been found by Department of Revenue, and they were garnishing his wages for child support because there was an outstanding arrears. And it was going to this person's mother, and he lived with his mother. But his mother died of AIDS. And when his mother died of AIDS, there was still an outstanding arrears that was being paid on this child support arrears, but the Department of Revenue did not want to give it to my client. They wanted to keep the money for themselves, for the state. And I actually had to go to court several times to get an order releasing the money to him because under Florida law, child support is the interest and property of the child, not even the parent. So just because she died did not mean his right to that back money. This was not ongoing support for him after age 18. This was money that he basically should have been paid while he was a minor and wasn't, and know what they were doing. And he was blind. He was legally blind and really needed that money so that he could get a special pair of glasses so that he could go and get a driver's license so that he could get a job. And it was a really great case and made me feel really good about it. And that's the kind of case that we're talking about. So he wasn't really a child, but he had just turned 18, maybe 6 months before. So it was one of those really good cases. And that's the kind of cases that pro bono work is all about.
I get this vivid mental image of you atop a white horse
with
a suit of armor.
That case felt good. That was a fun one.
Well, want to get some more cases here from Thomas and Rob as we talk to our distinguished family law attorneys here on Perspectives this morning, talking about the Florida Bar Foundation's involvement in family law cases, some recent help from the family law division of the bar. And we'll take your calls, too, at 414-1234, 800-926. 6809. The intricacies of family law, not just in Florida, but elsewhere. And it always seems to be a moving target because statutes and requirements and all of that evolve. They change over time. And so you really need someone in the trenches to try to figure out what is the best course of action and what you should do in cases like this. And that's why we have some family law attorneys here on Perspectives, not to handle cases in specificity, but to talk in general terms about what family law attorneys can provide insofar as helping you through the legal morass here. Thomas Duggar, what story do you have on that?
Well, I have one recently where we represented a gentleman who was never married to the biological mother, but they lived together for a significant amount of time. And he came home from work one day and the woman had taken their 10-year-old son to a different state. And there had been no paternity action. Nothing had been established as far as any sort of legal proceeding. And so we went in and got him his parental rights and then got a pickup order entered and actually were able to get the child back down to Tallahassee. It was a multi-step process, and the Leon County Circuit Court judge who overheard that case did an excellent job, and we were able to get him his boy back. You know, and she had just come home one day, and she was gone, and the child was gone, and that one felt really nice.
This is not the kind of thing that really someone can do on their own, right?
It's not. I mean, in that specific situation, the statutes require there to be some sort of parenting plan in place before you can enforce it and even say that the child has been absconded with. So it was a multi-step, multi-layer process, and then you have to give the person the right to defend themselves, and you have to effectuate service of process. And then if you're going to actually do the pickup order to pick up the child, you have to go through the law enforcement agency of the jurisdiction that you're in, and you have to make sure that the order that's entered in the Florida courts corresponds with federal law, with the UFSA, which is a federal law, so that they can go in and do the things that they need to do in the other state. So it's incredibly complex and an incredibly difficult situation for someone who doesn't understand it to navigate. While on its face, it may seem like a simple issue. She left with my child. Getting the child back is a much more, complex issue, which is why the family law section's gift is an invaluable resource.
Yeah, my gosh, do not try this at home. Rob Boyd, what you got?
I'm gonna speak in generalities a little bit. I don't want to get into too much detail on cases, but frankly, as a divorce attorney, some of the best cases I've had, and a couple with lawyers sitting here in the room with us, have been ones where they never got divorced. They have whatever issue. They couldn't work it out. They had to figure things out. And in the course of trying to figure it out, they would lawyer up with the anticipation that they are going to get divorced and may even file pleadings to go down that path, and things could be worked out otherwise. And I think that's what representation in family law cases is really about, is it takes out the raw emotion that individuals have. One case in particular that I did like was I represented a grandmother, and at times I always wish I represented the child. But I had a grandmother, and it was a pro bono case. I was doing it for legal services. The child was – I want to say the child was 10 at the time, little girl, and had lived with grandma since she was 2. Mom was doing her own thing, was not raising the child, and we had no idea where dad was. Some things came up within the grandmother's life where she needed to have a more stable situation regarding what her rights were with the grandchild. So I was able to come on the case for grandma, call another attorney and get them appointed as a guardian ad litem, which is crucial, crucial, crucial in some of these cases. And dad was only interested in the child to the extent that there was an economic return that could have been found. Not only did he not get the economic return, but grandma ended up with full placement of the grandchild, and I believe the grandchild's an AB student in high school now.
Oh, my God. That is a great story, a happy ending on that one. But as I was listening to everyone here, regardless of how you feel politically or whatever else, we know that families are changing. The Ward Cleaver model from the 50s and the 60s is not viable anymore, for better or ill. But there seems to be a lot more, shall we say, turmoil in domestic situations now than perhaps there were a generation or two ago. And that seems to be falling on family law attorneys like you folks.
Well, I think it just – it illustrates why family law attorneys have so – have such a public face, because there are people at every level of society and every different kind of family situation that you can imagine. I mean, you cannot make up – you couldn't write for television the stories that – people write for themselves in their own lives. And so, whether it's grandparents, people who aren't married, people who are married but are living in different places, I mean, the situations are complex and unique to each family. And it makes what we do really interesting. And when we can help people in that way, it makes us feel good. And, when I was listening to Thomas's story in particular, I was thinking that really illustrates how something that is an emergency. Someone took a child across state lines without any kind of discussion with the other parent and left. And, how long did that process take you, Thomas?
The process took a week and from start to finish, and it was a multi-step process. And in that situation, the judge who was hearing that matter deemed it an emergency and worked us in. And I had to work my schedule around it too. I mean, if the judge says you show up here, I show up then. And it was such an important situation that I had to. But it's still difficult. I mean, it's not – I mean, that particular judge, and I think it was Judge Walker, worked his schedule. I mean, he found time because that was a real emergency. And a lot of the problem, again, is a lot of times with pro se litigants or something, they'll just file something and say that it's an emergency. And if a pleading says emergency on it, the judge has to read it that day. And that's kind of where you get a lot of the crowding of the court system is you know, people who don't understand what constitutes an emergency or doesn't constitute an emergency or how to navigate that system. And that's where the section's gift, again, can help people work through that process, which will then kind of hopefully relieve some of the strain that's on our judiciary.
And particularly since – and this came out this morning. I saw it on email from the Florida Bar, that the bar is now – creaking under the strain of all the foreclosure filings.
Yes.
And so you have, you know, on the civil side, attorneys are going berserk trying to wade through these cases. Again, Rob, the courts are clogged on the civil side, yet criminal cases have to take precedence. And so the judges are juggling these dockets like crazy. And so a simple family law case could get lost in the shuffle, possibly?
Well, actually, at least in Leon County, the judges are assigned to divisions. So we have family law judges that only do family law. So, and then there are the in, for example, Palm Beach County has the highest level of foreclosures, I think, in the state. They have at least three judges assigned just to foreclosures. Tallahassee economically hasn't been hit quite as badly as some of the other states, portions of the state in terms of foreclosures. But, yes, it is another example of overuse of the judicial system, and there has been a large call for real estate lawyers to step in and do pro bono work in terms of foreclosures as well. And I think that they have stepped up and done that. But going back to your other question about has it changed, I have seen in the last maybe 5 or 6 years a much larger portion of paternity cases than I ever saw before, where – and I think that the studies have shown that the marriage rate in – it's not just the divorce rate that's very high. The lack of marriage rate is also very high. People are not getting married as often as they were before, and they're getting married later. And they might be having a child first and then maybe get married. But I've seen many, many more paternity cases than I ever saw before. And I've also had – and I think this is an issue that the family law section will have to look at because it does potentially fall under our purview even though it doesn't. It's a civil case. I've seen a large number of people who are not married and have children together and have lived together for 20 years, and now they're separating. And there's a lot of issues that go along with separating because they will own property together and they will own houses together and they will have made contributions. And so I think that that's something that the family law section is going to really have to look at seriously in the upcoming years.
Yeah, do we need more statutes, more laws to cover stuff like this?
Or? I wouldn't be surprised if we saw something about that coming down the pike in the near future.
And the family law section does a really good job of trying to identify which laws need work within the purview of family law. We have a whole committee that's devoted just to looking at specific areas of law and then determining if there needs to be legislation proposed that works on those types of laws. And so it's something that the section – and again, understand the section is all volunteer. It is completely volunteer time. And the four people that are sitting here today volunteer a lot of time for the section and work through that process and trying to identify areas that need change, that, if we feel that, the law is archaic, we work to change it. We've had changes in parenting and equitable distribution, the adoption of the Uniform Premarital Agreement Act. The family law section is working very hard to protect the rights of all Florida individuals as times change. The change of the parenting statute recently kind of brought us more up to speed with, fathers being more involved in children's lives. It was time for something like that to happen. So the section identified a problem, drafted legislation, got sponsors and worked that bill through the legislature, and thankfully was signed by the governor. And that's something that the family law section and these lawyers here take very seriously, is trying to identify areas that need work and how to fix them in a manner that works for all of Floridians.
So, Rob Boyd, besides more money for the courts, what else do you think we need?
Well, I think the professionals, I mean, kind of going to what Thomas is saying about the committees, there are a lot of professionals out there that are donating time, and not just attorneys. We have mental health specialists, financial experts. They sit and they do a lot of work. Equitable distribution is huge efforts are put into what is the right way, what is the better way. And they're always open to new ideas. And not only do they work with the courts, but they work with other committees or other sections within the Florida Bar. Equitable distribution, going to your foreclosure issue, I know has worked in tangent quite a bit with the real property probate and trust law section, who is trying to get a grip on the foreclosure issue. Everybody sitting in this room has got divorce cases that have a foreclosure in them. And what that in the court, the family law judge, even the family law judge has no ability to interfere with the third party contract with mortgage and note. So you have litigants who are fighting over the end of their relationship or their paternity, you know, and I'm totally with Kristen on that. But at the same time, they're going to have a similar case going through the system on the other side for a foreclosure. We used to fight for who got the house. Now we fight over who gets stuck with the house.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
So, I mean, there's a lot of different aspects of it. And I think I think private sector's dollars help. I think, you know, them taking a focus on what's important and doing what they can. The one caller who talked about the diversionary programs, be involved. It's the only way you get any change.
And that's what we're hearing, I think, from every nonprofit organization and governmental entity, too, is that if people want to solve these problems, instead of saying, well, someone else will handle it, even if it is the Florida Bar Division. Oh, and by the way, our foundation, if there were any organizations that would care to make a contribution, is that possible, you know, through the Family Law Division or to kind of help families in need? If, maybe a call to the Florida Bar might be appropriate to find out if
you can make the campaign that's raising money for the foundation is called the Now Campaign, and you can just go to the Florida Bar Foundation's website and donate to the Now Campaign because they need their funds now is the reason why.
This is a situation that is indeed an emergency. Yeah.
You're correct.
So just in closing, any last thoughts, Shannon, as we quickly go around the last few moments we have?
Well, I would just on the fundraising contribution piece, you know, again, for on a very local level for the listeners in this area, Legal Services of North Florida is an excellent organization that does a tremendous amount of work in representing underserved populations in our town. And you know, we welcome contributions to the Guardian Ad Litem program. That is an excellent program that, as you've heard from us all hour, is crucial to protecting the rights of children. And they are always looking for people who are interested in that.
Kristen Anderson, your thoughts?
Yes. Basically, I want to reiterate what Shannon said, is that Florida Legal Services is fabulous and the Guardian Ad Litem is so important that I think that if anybody has the wherewithal to give to those two organizations, that would be great. The lawyers can always do more than what they're doing. There's obviously that's obvious. However, the family law section is actually trying to do as much as they possibly can in this regard, and it's hopeful that that will be recognized by both the legislature in terms of the funding issues and also by the public in terms of the funding issues that need to go on in these areas.
Yeah, it's always helpful to get lawmakers
involved
these sorts
in
of issues.
Process.
Thomas Duggar, what do you think?
And I just wanted to thank the section, you know, for giving that donation. It's a huge donation, and as, you know, as a member of the section, we've, you know, coming to some profitable years, and we felt that it was necessary to, kind of put our money where our mouth is. And we talk about representing children and we talk about all the good that we're supposed to do. So as soon as we had a surplus, you know, we felt that it was the prudent thing to do was to, you know, take our private sector dollars and help out where there was a need. So I just wanted to thank, you know, leadership within the section for doing that.
Yeah, they could have blown it all on a beer and burgers party, but look what they did.
Absolutely.
Okay, Rob Boyd.
I think everybody's kind of talked about legal services here in Tallahassee, so I'll stretch it out statewide. To those that need help, each local area has a local bar association. Okay, there's the Florida bar that's mandatory membership, but each local bar has each Hernando County, multiple local bar associations out there that are voluntary. And each of these bar associations provide a lot of pro bono work to their legal services. So for people outside of the Tallahassee area, contact your local bar association. If you don't know who's providing the legal services in your area, call them. If you need the legal services, it'll point you in the right direction. And if you want to help them, they'll point you in the right direction.
Well, folks, for all you do, thank you so much to Shannon Novy, Kristen Adamson, Thomas Duggar, and Rob Boyd. Also, thanks this morning to Erin Van Sickle for all her help in coordinating this morning's program. Thanks, Erin. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox, Michael Fleming on the phones, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us again next week for more expert opinion and your input right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.